Under his breath, Webb said, "Lucky, lucky world. Got me Kevlar fleshing gloves so I don't chop off one of my fingers. Scissors, hide pullers, lip tuckers, nippers, forceps, probes, and surgical needles. Sounds like a cross between a mortician and a plastic surgeon, don't it?" He pointed to mixing bowls, paintbrushes, an air compressor, and a number of tins. "That's the artistic part of the business, the finishing touches to do justice to the animal."
"Funny thing," said Webb, "thinking about doing justice to something you've killed."
"I guess that separates folks like me from sons of bitches that kill and keep on walking," Billy shot back.
"I guess so," said Webb.
Billy walked over to a deerskin that was drying on a large table. "You know what's the first thing you cut off when you're gutting a deer?" he asked, looking directly at Webb.
"What's that?"
"It's penis."
"Good to know," said Webb dryly.
"Deer die like people," continued Billy, "with their eyes open. Glazing takes place almost immediately. If the eyes are closed or blinking, you better shoot them again." He looked at Webb again. "I suppose you run across that a lot in your line of work."
"Sometimes that's not an option with human beings."
"I guess not, though I'd take any one of the animals I got on display here over the human scum you got to deal with." He took a sip of his drink. "I think that's one of the reasons I like this place so much," said Billy. "Damn contradictions, since I seem to be a living, breathing one myself. Born dirt poor, barely finished 9th grade, made a lot of money in the unglamorous business of hauling cigarettes and other junk up and down the highways of this fine country, and married me a beautiful, intelligent young woman with a college degree. Now here I am, the master of an estate smack in the middle of fancy-ass Virginia hunt country, stuffing animals. One lucky man. Makes me want to get drunk, so let's go do something about that." He led them back, and they rejoined Gwen. She gave Webb a weak smile, as if to say, "I know, and I'm sorry." Bill went behind the bar and pointed at his wife.
"Scotch, honey?"
She nodded.
"I'll join you in another," he said. "Boys, and don't hand me that bullshit that you're on duty. If you don't drink with me, I'm throwing your butts out of here."
"Beer, if you haven't."
"We have everything here, Webb."
Webb made a mental note that the man said it like he damn well meant it.
"Same for me," said Romano. "I'll have one too, Billy," said Strait.
He walked over and took a bottle of beer from his boss and then joined Webb and Romano.
"I'm a lot more used to beer than I am fancy mixed drinks."
"Country boy?" asked Romano.
"Yes, sir. I grew up at the foothills of the Blue Ridge on a horse farm," said Strait. "But I wanted to see the world."
He rolled up his sleeve and showed them his Marine Corps insignia.
"Well, I did, on Uncle Sam's dime. Actually, I only saw a little slice of it called Southeast Asia, and it's hard to enjoy something like that when people are shooting at you."
"You don't look old enough to have been in Vietnam," commented Webb. Strait smiled broadly.
"All my clean living, I guess." He added, "Truth is, I got drafted right near the end, only 18 years old and change. First year in the jungle, I just kept my head down and tried my best to keep it on my shoulders. Then I got my ass caught and spent 3 months as a POW. Damn Viet Cong were into some sick stuff. Messing with your mind, trying to turn you traitor."
"I didn't know that about you, Strait," said Billy.
"Well, it's not something I put on my resume," he laughed. "But I finally escaped and an army shrink helped me to straighten out myself. That and a lot of booze and other stuff I can't mention," he added, grinning. "Got discharged, came back to the States, and pulled a little duty as a guard at a juvenile detention center. Now let me tell you, some of the kids I was guarding, they'd make the damn Viet Cong look like a bunch of wimps. Then I got married, but my ex didn't like my pay scale of $6 an hour, so I got me a desk job for a while. But that just wasn't me. Like I said, I grew up in the outdoors, around horses all my life. It's in your blood. He looked over at Billy. It better be, because it ain't in your bank account. They all laughed at that one, except Gwen. She looked annoyed that the cowpoke was even in her home, thought Webb, who was watching her closely. So anyway, Strait continued, I went back to horses and my wife walked out on me and took my boy and girl. You see them much? Asked Webb. Used to, not anymore, he grinned. Thought my son would follow in his old man's footsteps and be either a military grunt or maybe even get into the horses. He slapped his thigh. Hell, you know what? What's that? Asked Romano. Found out he was allergic to the damn things. Life sure is funny sometimes. As Webb studied the man, it didn't seem to him that Strait thought life was humorous at all. He had initially pegged Strait as a slow-witted fellow who did what he was told. He was going to have to rethink that. Then Billy came along, and now I'm helping him, he glanced at Gwen, and Ms. Canfield build their little empire right here. Billy raised his beer to the man. And doing a fine job of it, Strait. On that, Webb noted, Gwen looked away, and despite Billy's words of praise, it seemed that he was not all that enamored of his foreman. Webb decided to change the flow of conversation. Lower levels are usually cold, Webb said to Billy, especially with all this stone. And yet it feels warmer down here than it did upstairs.
We have the best heat in the world here, replied Billy, who worked the bar like he had been born to it. Radiant steam. Gwen said she showed you around. Well, those three Weill McLean boilers you saw heat the water to 212 and turn it into steam, of course. The steam flows through the pipes and into the cast iron gurney radiators that are in each room in the house. Then the steam cools back to water, runs through the system again, is turned into steam once more, and on it goes. And you have not only warmth, but a built-in humidifier. He handed Webb his beer. A lot of the steam pipes run under this floor. That's why it's so nice down here. I love it. And this time of year, it can get to be 85 in the day and 40 at night. But McLean boilers is why Gwen can go bare-armed down here and still feel nice and toasty. Ain't that right, honey?
Actually, I felt hot all day.
Webb rubbed his hand against the bar.
Nice setup with this thing. Dates from 1910, said Billy. The owner back then put a lot of work into the place. It needed it, though. Unfortunately, it needed a lot more by the time we got to it. Story of my life.
He carried the drinks over on a serving platter and handed them out. They all sat down.
Gwen tells me you've got some promising yearlings.
Yeah, maybe a triple crown winner in there, said Billy. Now that would be nice. Pay at least a month's worth of bills on this damn place.
Gwen and Webb exchanged smiles at this comment.
We can always hope, said Gwen. But being one step from the poorhouse all the time at least is exciting.
Well, we do okay here, said Strait, looking at her. Webb thought the choice of pronouns interesting. He was starting to wonder who actually owned the place.
Billy took a pull on his scotch. Yeah, this ain't such a bad place. Even got fox hunting around here.
Gwen looked repulsed.
That's disgusting.
Well, this is fox hunting country, and in Virginia you got to do like the snooty Virginians do.
Billy smiled at Webb.
Actually, our damn neighbors can be kind of a pain in the ass. They got ticked at me because I wouldn't let them ride across my land while they were chasing that damn fox. I told them they didn't fox hunt down Richmond way, and it seemed like the deck was stacked against the little feller anyway, and I've always tended to root for the underdog. Well, those pricks took me to court, and won. There was some old covenant in my chain of title that said fox hunting apparently runs with the land.
Romano looked disgusted.
Now that's a bitch. Talk about your unfree country. Well, they don't come across east winds anymore, said Strait.
Why's that? Asked Webb.
Billy shot one of their dogs. Excuse me, hounds. He slapped his leg and laughed.
Billy was nodding as though remembering a pleasant memory. He took after one of my horses. That particular horse was worth about $300,000. Damn hound dogs a dime a dozen, so damn right I shot him.
Did they take you to court again? Asked Webb.
They did, and this time I kicked their ass.
He smiled, took another drink, and looked at Webb.
So, did you enjoy the 50-cent tour Gwen gave you?
She'd make a great tour guide, actually. I was interested in the farm being a stop on the Underground Railroad during the Civil War.
Billy pointed to the gun cabinet. And that stops right over there.
Webb looked at the gun cabinet and said, I'm not getting it.
Go ahead and show him, Billy, said Strait.
Billy motioned for Webb and Romano to follow him. He went over and pushed down on what Webb figured must be a lever concealed in the cabinet's frame. Webb heard a click, and the cabinet swung toward him, revealing a small opening.
There's no electricity or windows in there, just a couple of rough bunks, but when you're running for your freedom, you can't be too picky, said Billy.
He picked up a flashlight that was hanging on a wall peg and handed it to Webb.
Have a look.
Webb took the flashlight, poked his head inside, and swung the light around. He almost dropped the flashlight when the light caught on a man sitting there in a bentwood rocker. As his eyes adjusted to the poor light, he saw it was actually a mannequin dressed as a male slave, with a hat and mutton chop whiskers, the whites of its eyes in unsettling contrast to the painted black skin.
Billy laughed and said, "You've got some damn strong nerves. Most people scream."
"Billy put that in there, not me, Webb," said Gwen quickly, with a trace of disgust in her voice.
"It's one of my sick little jokes," added Billy. "But hell, if you can't laugh at life, what are you going to laugh at?"
On that, they finished their drinks and went in to dinner. They didn't eat in the formal dining room. As Billy explained it, the room was so big that when you wanted to talk to one another, you had to scream to be heard, and he was a little hard of hearing as it was. They ate in a small room off the kitchen. Gwen gave the blessing and made the sign of the cross, as did Romano. Strait, Webb, and Billy just looked on. Gwen had made a Caesar salad, sirloin tips, fresh asparagus, and a cream sauce, and what smelled and tasted like homemade rolls. Cherry pie and coffee finished off the meal, and Romano sat back, rubbing his flat, hard stomach.
A lot better than MREs, he said,
referring to the U.S. military's meals ready to eat.
Thanks, Gwen, it was great, said Webb.
We used to entertain quite a bit in Richmond, she said. We don't do a lot of that anymore. She shot a quick glance at her husband as she said this.
Lots of things we don't do anymore, said Billy Canfield. But it was a fine meal and my toast to the chef.
He went over to the sideboard and brought back a decanter of brandy and four cut crystal glasses.
Now, I'm partial to my Jim Beam, like any good southern gentleman, but a proper toast requires a proper libation.
He poured out the brandy and filled his glass with Beam, and they toasted Gwen. She smiled and raised her glass to them.
Well, it's nice to be so popular with so many men.
As they took their leave, Webb drew Billy aside.
I just want to get the ground rules clear. Be sure to set the alarm when we leave, and set it every night before you go to bed. There are so many ways in and out of this place, I want you and Gwen to come and go the same way. That way you won't inadvertently leave a door unlocked. If you're thinking of going out, even if it's just a stroll, you call us first and we go with you. If anything spooks you or Gwen, you call us. Nothing is too small, okay? Here's my cell phone number. It'll be on 24 hours a day. And I want you to strongly consider letting Romano and me stay in the house. If something goes down, seconds do count.
Billy looked at the slip of paper with Webb's number on it.
Prisoners in our own home. I guess it's come to that, those bastards.
He shook his head wearily. Those guns in your cabinet, they just for show, or you use them in your hunting?
Most of them are shotguns. Couldn't use them on game you want to mount because shotgun ammo ruins the skin and takes off heads. I keep my big game weapons in a locked cabinet upstairs. I've also got me a 12-gauge and a .357 Magnum, too, both loaded. They're for two-legged sumbitches trespassing on my land. Gwen's a damn fine shot, too. Probably better than me.
Good. Just remember to shoot only the bad guys. Now, you got any travel plans coming up?
Just a shipment of horses we're taking up to Kentucky in a few days. I'm going with Strait and some of the boys.
Talk to Bates. He may see it differently.
Listen to Webb, said Nemo, who walked over after overhearing their conversation. Somebody's looking to get you, Billy. Stay put so the feds can protect you.
Going soft on me, Nemo? Asked Billy.
Hell no. Something happens to you, I'm out of a job.
Any visitors you expecting out of the ordinary? Webb asked.
Billy shook his head. Most of our friends in Richmond aren't our friends anymore. Maybe it's mostly our fault. We keep to ourselves here.
These neighbors of yours at the Southern Bell, what do you know about them?
Only that they're ruder than me, he laughed. To tell you the truth, I don't know much about them. They don't join in much local stuff, not that I do either. I've only seen what I guess was the foreman.
How about that chopper and their plane?
Billy made a face. That is damn aggravating. Scares the horses.
How often do you see the plane and the chopper go out?
Billy considered this. A lot.
What's a lot? Nightly? Weekly?
Not nightly, but more often than weekly.
Same direction each time or different?
Different?
He looked at Webb warily.
What are you thinking?
Webb gave a tight smile. I'm thinking we'll just keep an eye on that airline next door. When Romano and Webb got back to the carriage house, Webb filled him in on the talk he had had with Billy.
You think something's going down on the property next door? Said Romano.
No, I think something's going up.
Well, that was an interesting evening. I gotta tell you, that hobby of Canfield's is kind of spooky.
Yeah, it's not exactly like building model planes. And what's your take on Nemo Strait?
Seems like a regular enough fellow.
I was sort of surprised he was invited to the big house for dinner with the boss.
Well, look at where Billy came from. He's probably more comfortable around people like Strait than a bunch of rich fat cats fox hunting.
You're probably right. Gwen didn't seem to care for him, though.
She's more of a lady, and he's kind of crude, he added with a smile. Like me. I didn't know she was Catholic.
Yeah, she's got a little chapel in the woods where she goes to pray every day for her son, the one I let die.
You didn't let the kid die, Webb. Hell, if the negotiators had let you guys do your thing from the get-go, the boy probably would be alive.
Look, Paulie, I got an appointment tonight, so you're going to have to go it alone. I don't have to leave for a while, so you can get some shut-eye. Bates is keeping agents at the rear and front gates for the next couple of days, though, so you're not really all by your lonesome.
Appointment? What kind of appointment?
I'll tell you all about it when I get back.
This have something to do with what happened to Charlie, team?
Maybe.
Well, damn, Webb, I'd like to be in on that.
And I'd like you to be covering my back. Can't desert the old post. I should be back before morning. Now, if I were you, I'd patrol around a little bit. I wouldn't be surprised if Canfield started off by testing us, and so he might slip out. Although I think almost dying this morning put the fear of God in him, but we can't take that chance.
Not to worry. I'll do some snooping.
If you see that plane or chopper go over, log it in. And I brought a bunch of night optics. Help yourself.
Those damn things always give me a headache, and they screw with your depth perception too much.
Yeah, well, you remember those damn things saved our necks in Kosovo.
Okay, okay. I'm gonna hit the sack.
And Paulie?
Yeah?
Just because there aren't a bunch of guys with big guns surrounding us doesn't mean it's not dangerous. Be extra careful. I don't want to lose anybody else, okay?
Hey, Webb, remember who you're talking to.
You and me have had our differences over the years, but we've also been to hell and back together. I kind of like having you around. You hear me?
Gee, Webb, you really do care.
You're a real prick, Romano. You know that?
Chapter 33. When Webb had called the number on the slip of paper Big F had given him, the voice that had answered was a man's. Webb didn't know if it belonged to Big F, since his initial encounter with the giant had involved concussions rather than words. Webb had hoped it was Big F on the line because the voice was high and shrill. What a wonderful joke for God to play on the man by giving him a squeaky set of pipes. Yet a silly voice wasn't going to lessen the fear of doing the two-step with the walking oak again. Big F didn't hit with his tonsils. The man had told Webb to be driving north across the Woodrow Wilson Bridge at exactly 11 o'clock that night. Webb would receive additional instructions at that time, by cell phone, Webb figured. His number was unlisted, but it seemed nothing was sacred these days. Webb, of course, had sensibly questioned why he should even go.
"If you want to know what happened to your buddies, you'll be there," the man had said. "And if you want to keep on living," he added.
Appropriately enough, the phone line had gone dead after that. Webb thought about running down to Quantico and snagging a Barrett 50-caliber rifle and a couple thousand rounds of ammo from the equipment cage. One of the great things about HRT was that it purchased for its operators the very latest weapons and then let them do with them what they wanted. It was like a giant candy store for the violence-minded. Yet he finally decided that even at gun-happy HRT, it might raise some eyebrows, his checking out a 50 caliber and enough ammo to shoot up a good-sized city. He did briefly think about calling in Bates as backup, but then realized that might hold disastrous consequences. Big F hadn't survived on the streets this long by being stupid or impossibly lucky. He would smell the Bureau boys for sure, and wouldn't that just royally piss off the big guy? But if he had information about who had set up his team, Webb had to find out what it was. He had driven past the entrance to the Southern Bell Farm. The opening was not as ornate as East Wind's, and Webb noted that the gates were closed and locked. He thought he could see a man patrolling near the entrance, but he wasn't certain of that or whether the man was armed. An interesting place. Even as he was thinking this, he heard the chopper coming overhead. He looked up, saw it passing by, and then it disappeared from his sight. Maybe it was landing at Southern Bell. Maybe terrorists had landed in America. Webb was only half kidding. He had stopped to fill the car with gas. He thought about calling Claire, but then decided against it. What would he say? Maybe I'll see you tomorrow, and maybe I won't. The Woodrow Wilson Bridge had long been the single worst traffic bottleneck in the United States interstate highway system. To most local drivers, mentioning the name of the 28th President of the United States sent them into fits of rage. What a legacy, Webb thought, for a life of selfless public service. Better to have your name attached to a rest stop. At least then people would think of you in connection with badly needed bodily relief. He rolled onto the aging bridge and checked his watch. 11:30. The Potomac was calm tonight, with no boat traffic apparent. The thick line of trees on the Maryland side contrasted sharply with the bright lights of Old Town Alexandria on the Virginia side, and the Capitol Dome and National Monuments to the north. He passed the halfway point on the bridge. Traffic was relatively light and flowing well. A Virginia State Police car passed Webb heading in the opposite direction. Webb felt like yelling after him, "Hey, want to be my friend tonight? Got an appointment with Dr. Death." Webb left the bridge and kept driving. He looked around. Nothing. So much for exact timing.
Then a chilling thought hit him. Was he being set up to take a hit? Was there a sniper out there somewhere drawing a bead on him right now with his scope? Was the guy dialing in the drop compensation right now, seating the shell, settling his finger on the trigger, exhaling one last breath before he fired? Was Webb London the world's biggest idiot?
Take the next right! Now! Now!
The voice seemed to come from everywhere and nowhere, and startled Webb so badly he almost pulled the Mercury into a 180. Shit! Webb cried out, even as he shot the car across three lanes of traffic, while horns blared at him and cars dodged around him. He cut it so close the sedan skimmed the guardrail. Webb was now on the entry ramp onto Interstate 295.
Take it to DC, the voice said in a calmer tone.
Damn it, give me a little more notice next time, Webb shot back, and then wondered if the guy could even hear him. He also wondered how they had managed to plant a communications device in his car without anyone seeing them. Webb pointed the car north to DC. He took deep breaths to calm himself. Right now, he wished to never again hear another voice without a face to go with it.
Keep going, the voice said. I'll tell you where to turn.
Well, so much for what one wished for. It wasn't squeaky voice. Maybe this was Big F. It seemed to be a Big F voice, thought Webb, for it was deep, blunt, threatening. Figured. Webb was very familiar with the area he was now in. The lowdown on this stretch of lonely, woods-bracketed highway was that if one's car broke down, it would not be there when the owner came back for it. And if the owner stayed with his broken-down car, he wouldn't be coming back either. The boys that hunted here were the AAA of felony. Also down this way was St. Elizabeth's, the mental hospital for celebrity maniacs like John Hinckley, and for those who kept trying to go over the fence at the White House, among many others. The voice said,
take the next exit. Turn left at the light, go 1.1 miles, and take a right.
Should I be writing this down, or can you fax it to me? Asked Webb, because he just felt like it.
Shut the hell up!
Well, at least they could hear him, and see him. He looked in his rearview mirror, but there were quite a few headlights back there. And yet, if there was one thing Webb couldn't stand, it was a criminal who lacked a good sense of humor. He slipped that one away in his payback file. He followed the directions and soon was smack in the middle of the death zones of northeast and southeast D.C. that bordered the Anacostia River and where over 1,000 people had been murdered in the last 7 years. By comparison, across the river, and seemingly several universes away, the affluent northwest area had suffered a little over 20 homicides in the same time span. However, there was some sense of perverse balance, because the northwest quadrant had far more larcenies and thefts committed, for a very simple reason. The poor rarely had things criminals wanted to steal, while the wealthy, of course, had an abundance of them. The Frederick Douglass National Historical Site was along where Webb was traveling, and Webb figured that the Martin Luther King Jr. of his time would not be at all pleased with how things had turned out. Webb was given another set of directions and soon was pulling down a dirt road winding between nothing but trees and dense foliage. Webb had been around here before. It was a favorite dumping ground for those in the more violent stretches of the city who didn't like to mess up their neighborhoods with body parts. HRT had done a couple of ops down here, in fact. One had gone textbook without one shot fired. The other had left three men dead. All bad guys who just couldn't accept the fact that they were so outclassed and thus had stupidly pulled guns instead of putting up their hands. Maybe they thought there would be warning shots fired. Well, there was no chapter in the HRT manual on warning shots. Whenever Webb had pulled his trigger, somebody ended up dead.
Stop the car, said the voice, and get out. Lay your gun on the front seat.
How do you know I have a gun?
If you don't, you got horseshit for brains.
And if I give my gun up, what exactly do I have for brains?
If you don't, you ain't gonna have no brains left.
Webb placed the pistol on the front seat and slowly got out of the car and looked around. He saw nothing except trees and a moonless sky. He could smell the river water, and it was hardly comforting. The few movements he heard were assuredly not Big F-like, most likely squirrels, foxes, or minor-grade criminals trolling for their supper. Right now, the only thing Webb wished he had done was stash Romano in the trunk. Well, now you think of that. He stiffened slightly when he heard them coming. As they appeared from the cover of trees, Webb could make out three large men in a row. They were all taller than Webb, and they all had some serious hardware pointed at him. Webb wasn't really focusing on them, though, for the far larger man was right behind them. Webb had felt sure he was going to see the giant tonight, and yet the sight of Big F was still a little unnerving. He had on different clothes, but the same Club Med style. The shirt, though, wasn't opened this time. All of Webb's wounds, inflicted by the giant criminal, seemed to tingle in the man's presence, as though some chemical interaction had just been triggered. Next to Big F was a white guy, which surprised Webb until he recognized Clyde Macy in the flesh. He resembled a skeleton more in person than he did in the photo. Webb recalled his talk with Bates when they had speculated who Cove's inside person might be. Macy? Peebles? Macy didn't look like a snitch, but who really knew? As Webb kept his gaze on the man, he noted that the suit Macy wore and the ear radio made him look like Secret Service. Maybe he'd had aspirations to join the service once, until he realized he liked killing people more. Peebles was nowhere in sight. The new breed of criminal entrepreneurs apparently didn't like to get their fingernails dirty. The three underlings circled Webb while Big F stood there and watched. Macy hung off to the side. He looked alert and relaxed at the same time. But it was easy to tell the man took his work very seriously. To Webb, the other men looked a little bored, as though they were the varsity called in to scrimmage with the JV. Well, that was a real confidence booster. One man drew a short object from his coat pocket that looked like a microphone. He ran it up and down Webb's body while another man checked Webb for additional weapons. He found none, but did confiscate Webb's cell phone. Another of the men with what Webb knew now was an electronic wand designed to ferret out nosy surveillance devices did the once-over on Webb's car. The wand only sounded once near the rear seat, but the man seemed unconcerned by this. He turned and nodded at Big F. Webb understood this silent exchange. The man had detected the electronic device they had planted in Webb's car. The men stepped back, and Big F came forward and leaned his bulk on the hood of Webb's car. Webb thought he could hear the car groaning, and who could blame it?
"How's the face?"
The man's voice was neither squeaky high nor brutally deep. It was middle of the road, calm, non-threatening. It wasn't the faceless voice inside Webb's car. Webb could be talking to his stockbroker. If he had a stockbroker, that is.
"Only thing hurt was my pride. I take it you're Big F."
The man smiled at that and then slapped his thigh. To Webb, it sounded like the ominous smack of thunder. Everything this guy did was big. The other men laughed too, obviously cueing off their boss.
"Shit, Big F. Damn right I'm Big F. That's good. Ain't that good, boys?"
They all nodded and said it was good. Damn good. Macy didn't even crack a smile. He just stood there and stared at Webb like he was trying to will him to die.
"Because if there was somebody bigger than you coming down the pike, then I don't think I want to make his acquaintance."
Webb knew it was always good to get on the bad guy's good side, show you weren't afraid. Violent criminals just loved fear, and they just loved to cut the throats of fearful people. Big F laughed again. Yet when he stopped and looked serious, so did everybody else. Instantly, Webb noted.
"I got me a problem. I'm here to help."
Webb eased forward just a notch. Now he could take out two of the guys with kicks. Big F was something else altogether, sort of like punching Mount Rushmore, but you went with the point of least resistance first.
Somebody's setting me up to take a fall for something I ain't done.
You know what happened to my team?
I don't need that shit, you understand me?
He stood, towering over them all, and the look in his eyes made Webb's heart race.
How old do you think I am?
Webb gave him the once-over.
22?
32,
Big F said proudly. Now that in black years.
He turned to Macy.
Would that be in tidy-whitey time?
120,
said Macy in a learned tone, as though he were the PhD of this illustrious group. Big F looked back at Webb.
I'm 120. I'm an old man in a young man's business. I don't need this shit. You go tell your crew that. Don't come hunting my ass down, 'cause I ain't done it.
Webb nodded.
Then I need to know whose business it is. Without that, I can guarantee you squat.
Big F eased himself back down on the car and slid out a Beretta 9mm with a muzzle suppressor attached, Webb noted. Things were definitely not looking good.
Messenger's a dime a dozen, said Big F, eyeing Webb calmly.
It'll mean a lot more coming from me. I've got a lot invested in this one.
Webb took one tiny step forward as he pretended to be merely shifting his weight. Now he could tag Big F with a spin kick right on the cerebellum. If the man could shake that off, then crown him king of the world.
And maybe you figure you owe me one for saving Kevin, him being your little brother and all.
He ain't my brother.
Webb tried hard not to show his surprise.
Is that right?
He my son.
Big F rubbed his nose, coughed, and then spit.
Course we got the same mama.
Webb started for a moment and then looked at the other men. They obviously already knew this and seemed to accept it as mainstream, at least their version of mainstream. Yet why shouldn't they, Webb thought. What was a little incest among family? You couldn't exactly do it with strangers. Grandma had said Kevin was a little slow. Well, with that twisted family tree, Webb could see why.
Well, I hope Kevin's okay, said Webb.
The boy's got nothing to do with you, Big F said sharply.
Okay, thought Webb, so Kevin did mean something to the man. That was valuable intelligence.
Who took out my team? Tell me and we go our separate ways. No hard feelings.
Ain't that easy.
Sure it is, Webb prompted. Names, that's all I want.
Big F studied his pistol.
You know what my biggest problem is?
Webb eyed the Beretta and wondered if he was Big F's biggest problem. He prepared to launch himself.
Economy's too hot. I can't keep good people.
He looked over at his men.
Tuna man, front and center.
Webb watched as one of the men stepped forward. He was 6'4" and broad-shouldered and wore what looked to Webb to be a very expensive suit and enough gold and silver on his neck, wrists, and fingers to start his own precious metals exchange.
You think you can take this little dude with just your hands, Tuna?
Tuna smirked.
Ain't be needing both hands for that boy.
Don't know about that, said Big F. Way this boy kicked me, I felt that shit. Well, if you think you can, lay your gun down and get to it.
Tuna slipped his gun out of his waistband and placed it on the ground. He was at least 15 years younger than Webb and much larger. And yet he moved so gracefully that Webb was certain the man was as nimble as he was strong. And when Tuna assumed a classic martial arts stance, Webb knew he was in for something serious, and he hadn't even recovered from last night. Webb held up his hand.
Look, we don't have to do this. You think you can kick my ass? I think I can kick yours. Let's just call it a draw.
Big F shook his head. Little dude. Either fight or take the bullet.
Webb stared at the man and his gun, sighed, then put up his fists. The two men circled each other for a few moments. Webb sized his opponent up and saw few weaknesses, yet he did see something else that might be helpful. He tried a kick, and Tuna easily caught Webb's leg and held onto it for a moment before twisting the limb and throwing Webb down. Webb quickly rose and took a side kick on the forearm. It stung like hell, but better his arm than his head. The two feinted and parried a few times more before Tuna caught Webb with a flying spinner, and he went down again, but he bounced right back up.
"Is that all the shit you got, Tuna?" taunted Webb. "Man, you got me by 50 pounds in 15 years. If I was you, your ass would be out for the count by now."
Tuna dropped his smirk and hit Webb with an old-fashioned right jab, but ate a hard left cross to the head in return. Tuna didn't seem to like his face getting marked, something Webb was quick to pick up on.
"Hey, Tuna, a screwed-up face isn't the end of the world. With no ladies eating up your paycheck, you can probably really put some bucks away for retirement."
"You going down, man," said Tuna, "and you staying down."
"Not from some pussy like you, I'm not."
An enraged Tuna lunged at Webb and caught him with a sharp punch right to the kidney. Webb almost went down from the blow, but he wrapped his arms around Tuna's middle and started to squeeze. Tuna hit him with two more shots to the head, but Webb held on. Like a constrictor, each time Tuna took a breath, Webb would squeeze a little bit more, not letting the man's diaphragm return to its original position. More headshots and more squeezes, and Webb could start to feel the bigger man wavering, his gasps of breath so pleasant to hear. And then Webb loosened his grip just a little, and it was enough for Tuna to get his own clench on Webb, which was what Webb had intended. The two men swung each other around, panting heavily, their rivulets of sweat meeting each time their bodies did. Tuna tried to throw Webb off, but Webb held on because he had other plans. Finally, Tuna swung Webb around and Webb's grip was broken and he went sprawling. Actually, he did a controlled forward roll, grabbed Tuna's pistol where he had left it on the ground, came upright, lunged forward, put a neck lock on the stunned Tuna, and placed the gun to his head, all in a blur of motion.
"You have to get yourself some better security," Webb said to Big F. "Ain't that right, Tuna?"
Big F raised his pistol and fired. His shot hit Tuna dead center in the forehead. The man dropped and died without making one sound. Most gunshots to the head had that effect, Webb knew, the ability of the victim to speak gone before the brain could dial up the scream. Bullets and flesh were like ex-wives. They just never mixed that well.